Hi, this is Kevin Clark. I'm chief correspondent for America Magazine. I'm talking today with Jill Marie Gerschutz-Bell. Jill is the CRS Senior Policy and Legislative Specialist dealing with migration issues for Catholic Relief Services. Jill, thanks for visiting with me today. Welcome.
Thank you.
Jill, you know, it's National Migration Week. The U.S. bishops observe every year. What, looking out, to, let's say, from a God's perspective of the world, what would you say are the two or three major migration crises that Catholic Relief Services is paying attention to today?
I can't imagine a more urgent time to be addressing issues of migration and refugees, Kevin. When we think about people on the move writ large, we still have over 200 million people on the move. On top of that, 65 million forcibly displaced, so people fleeing from conflict, some of them within their own country. I think of the 3.3 million displaced in Iraq, and many of them who have crossed international borders, like the more than 4 million people who've fled Syria, or the many Afghans who've been displaced for generations, literally. So the international community has really been stressed by the significant number of people on the move. And of course, if God's looking down, he's saying, you really need to do more to help. You need to do more to help these people.
Now, can we make a quick, just for people's information, you mentioned 200 million. I think a lot of folks might have heard the UN figure of 65 million people displaced or refugees. Can you break that down for folks? You guys in the humanitarian and relief community often talk of IDPs and refugees and displaced people, people on the move. Can you break open that 200 million figure for us a little bit?
Right. Well, the 200 million are people in the sort of migrants categories. It's the very broad category. So that would be economic migrants, people with or without visas. That figure of forcibly displaced is on top of that. And among the forcibly displaced, we would count refugees. But here's an area where, you know, the legal frame gets us beyond what the particular needs are of a community. So if you're a refugee, legally recognized as a refugee by governments, that means that you have a piece of paper that shows that you've gone through this process that proves that you fled on one of five grounds that requires another government to give you certain protections.
Yeah, so that's a very important classification to achieve if you're someone who's been displaced by conflict or dislocation or civic dislocations.
That's right. But if you are a humanitarian or if you are the Catholic Church, it is a distinction that is not as valid. It's valid because you have access and rights to more assistance, but we serve people around the globe, many of whom do not have that refugee status, and their needs are even more significant. So as the number of people looking for governmental protection increases, it becomes even more challenging to address their needs because the political will of these governments shrinks.
Yeah, and our moral call is slightly different than what the international law might dictate.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you mentioned the Middle East. We're aware of the Syrian crisis, the crisis affecting internally displaced people in Iraq, many of them Christians. What are some other major global hotspots of migration?
You know, what we don't hear a lot about, Kevin, are the numbers of refugees and internally displaced in Africa. So we think about 4 million people leaving Syria. There are 4 million refugees in Africa alone. And of course, many of those host governments have even less means to provide assistance. So we think about Central African Republic and South Sudan, where, you know, there's food insecurity, there's conflict, and those conflicts and those needs get particularly pressed when you're talking about infinite resources, and so many of which are going to higher profile conflicts like the one in Syria. So CRS is constantly pushing Congress and the administrations to make sure that they respond to the need for more humanitarian assistance. And it's going to be really critical to do that again this spring.
Yeah, and I think you'd have to add the dislocation caused by Boko Haram in northern Nigeria and the surrounding states, and perhaps the drought crisis in Madagascar now, also areas of concern for CRS?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, we are responding to many many needs throughout the continent.
Why do those kinds of conflicts, you think, end up getting so much less attention? Why do we have to wait for those famous Pulitzer Prize winning photos to arrive in our newspapers and magazines before we seem to pay attention to them?
I think it's a good question, because I'm of the generation where I was coming of age when we saw the distended bellies on the infomercials. And that did get a lot of press attention. That was, of course, a very different press.
Ethiopia, there. I think, probably would yes. people associate with those tragic
right.
photos.
Yeah. Right. You know the media better than I do, Kevin, but I think often it's a numbers game. When you hit a certain number of people who are displaced, it tends to capture more attention. We also know from the perspective of CRS that rapid onset disasters and crises tend to get more attention and press than the slower onset movement of peoples.
Yeah. So like Madagascar, where a drought is resulting in a famine, but it's been a very slow process. That has been taking a long time for people to pay attention to.
That's right. And, people on Capitol Hill, particularly the committees with whom we work, they are attentive to these needs. And, we can get resources to areas where you have tens of thousands in need, around a million. When you start to see 4 million people fleeing from Syria, even countries like Lebanon, Jordan, Turkey, who have been really quite generous in their response to refugees, ultimately hit a point where they have closed their borders. And so that has strained the entire humanitarian system and the many donor governments who are trying to provide assistance to those people.
Yeah, I think you mentioned earlier, we're dealing with numbers in the last few years that are pretty much unprecedented, not since the end of World War II, I think the United Nations has said, have so many people been dislocated by conflict and crisis.
That's right.
Yeah. What about closer to home? When we talk about migration issues here in the United States, I guess Central America and Mexico come immediately to mind.
Yeah. We look to Europe and the Middle East in judgment sometimes. And yet if we think about the people coming to our borders, the U.S. government hasn't responded in a way that would make us proud as Judeo-Christians. In 2016, we have seen more people coming from Central America to the United States asking for asylum than we saw even in 2014, when that movement hit the press in such a big way. Children in particular are coming seeking asylum. And as we heard from the president-elect, he's not appearing to be very open to this community. So as Catholics, we need to find ways to make it known to our elected officials that we think they deserve due process to make their asylum claims.
Jill, average American Catholics, they might support the president-elect's idea of having a greater security or greater barriers at the U.S. borders. Do you think they'd be surprised by what the church might have to say about that regarding the call to accept people in crisis who are trying to cross borders?
The church's position is very reasonable, Kevin. The church acknowledges a government's right to protect its borders. And the U.S. government has done that for many years. In fact, we've thrown billions, tens of billions after tens of billions of dollars at the border. And there are layers of fencing and radar on the border. What the church has said, though, is that right of sovereignty of a country has to be measured against the needs of people within the country and throughout, right? I mean, Pope Benedict was very clear that we are responsible for all of our neighbors, near or far. So for the church, clearly these needs of people who have fled their home countries due to poverty and violence, we do have to be more open and willing to accept them. When you look at the money that's being spent on the border, CRS could work so many miracles if that money were spent to develop the countries from which these people are fleeing. El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala.
Yeah, and I think the people we're trying to assist, most of them would prefer to stay in their home countries if the opportunities and the safety were part of their lives.
Nothing stops a bullet like a job. If people have opportunity in school or to find work, they're less likely to fall into the kind of gang activity that has really created the instability in Central America. And the church teaches that people have a right not to migrate. They have a right to migrate when they need to meet their needs, but they have a right to meet their needs where they are. We have a program called Youth Build. It was developed off of one here in the United States, where we help kids who are not in school, youth who are not in school and don't have work. They come from difficult backgrounds, maybe broken families. We help them to learn not only the hard skills to find work or return to school, but also the softer skills. And these youth have become leaders in their communities. We have a young woman who's started her own bread baking business. So that kind of investment will pay dividends, and it helps to build the human dignity that is the vision we all share as Christians.
Has anyone ever sat down and tried to do a numbers, a cost-benefit analysis of what we spend containing things at the border to what we invest in trying to help people in the South, Central America, remain in their homes and in their communities?
Oh, I could tell you off the top of my head that
please do.
Far and away leagues more being spent on border security than what we invest in country. So last year, the CRS worked with Congress. We supported the Obama administration's request to increase investment in the region. And ultimately, $750 million was approved by Congress. We spend, as I mentioned before, tens of billions on the border. That's not an annual figure, but it shows you the significant difference between the border spending and the investments in the region.
So one way average Catholics might be able to get involved in these issues is perhaps reminding Congress of trying to achieve a better balance with those resources, you know, their Congress members.
And particularly to say we believe that investing in the region is the way to go. It's a long-term solution. It's the dignified solution, and it's going to get the results that we want to see. We've invested in a Food for Education program, partnering with the U.S. government, helping to improve education in one of the poorest communities in Honduras. Can you believe in 1 year, CRS improved the literacy rate by 22%?
Throughout Honduras? Or
throughout the province where we were working. We were working with over 1,000 schools. Education experts will tell you nobody achieves that kind of jump in literacy in a year. So the opportunities are immense. They're significant.
During this National Migration Week, unfortunately we're coming to the end of it, but you know it's going to be an ongoing issue. How else might Catholics become involved in this particular issue?
Great question. Pope Francis, you'll recall, has asked every community to welcome refugees. I think when we look at the question of migrants knocking on our doors, we've seen the rhetoric, become very strong. And as Catholics, we need to stand up and let our members of Congress know that we are for a dignified response. We are for due process and protection of asylum. And we do support welcoming strangers and those in need in a dignified way. We can do that talking to members of Congress. We can do that in our own parishes, looking at our communities and identifying where there are needs for English as a second language classes, for example. Catholic Charities knows these communities well. And if our parishes can get more involved volunteering with Catholic Charities, we would see the kind of solidarity that we know can change the world.
Looking ahead to this year and perhaps a few years down the road, where do you perceive the next crisis spot or issue to revolve around?
Clearly, I've been surprised at the amount of conversation around climate refugees. It is a topic where, once again, the church has taken a perspective that is much broader than most governments will, saying that people fleeing climate are refugees.
Might be described as economic migrants, which makes it much harder for them to get these resources they need.
Often climate is a secondary factor. So the climate created an economic need or challenge or some other. Some people are suggesting that we should reopen the definition of what makes a person a refugee. Those of us who followed the issue for a long time have said that in this climate, if you reopen the definition of refugee, politically you may end up with a worse deal and actually a more narrow definition because of where governments are. So this is me speaking, but we're going to need a new kind of concept for people who are fleeing due to climate reasons. That is not official CRS policy, but you know the church is tracking these issues very closely, and its voice has tended to be ahead of governments and leading the charge. So we need to pay attention to it, particularly Pope Francis.
Well, thank you very much, Jill. We've been speaking with Jill Marie Gerschutz-Bell. She's the CRS's Senior Policy and Legislative Specialist on Migration. Thank you for listening.